noon here at here on WFT Champaign 90.1 FM streaming, and as I said before, you can stream us online at weft.org. And this is my public affairs show, The World We Live In. I apologize about the phone. I don't know who, but ringing in the background. Today on my show, I wanted to, as I said before, talk about the Robert. This past week marked the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Robert Kennedy, and I kind of wanted to mirror or talk how what was going on this was 1968, what was kind of going on in that election, and I apologize. What was going on with this is a speech that Robert Kennedy gave at the. This is after he had won the California primary on June 4th, 1968, and this was unfortunately his last speech that he gave before his assassination. So I will play that, or at least, yeah, I will play that here for you right now.
Thank you very much. I want to take a. Can you hear this? Can you hear? You can't hear? Can you hear that? That's great. Can we hear from any of this? Let's see if we can. Can we get something that works?
Can we get the guy? Hey! Hold it.
Just one moment. But we can't hear. Can you hear on any of these? Can you hear on that? That's nice. Can you hear? I want to first. Express my high regard to Don Drysdale. Who pitched his sixth straight shutout tonight. And I hope that we have his good fortune in our campaign. Could I express my appreciation to a number of people? First to Jess Unruh for all that he did, first getting me into this. And express my appreciation to him for his friendship and his help during this campaign, and for his continued perseverance and his effort, and for all of those who have been associated with him. I'll always be very grateful. And if I could also express my appreciation to a number of other people, if you just bear with me for a moment, I'd like to express my appreciation to Steve Smith, who was very ruthless, but but it's been effective. And I just want to say how much how grateful I am to him, to his wife, my sister Jean, to my sister Pat, and to my mother, and to all of those other Kennedys who came and helped me. I want to express my gratitude to my dog Freckles, who's been maligned. And I don't care what they, as Franklin Roosevelt said, I don't care what they say about me, but when they start to attack my dog. I'm not doing this in the order of importance, but I also want to thank my wife, Ethel. And her patience during this whole effort is fantastic. Thank you very much. Freckles has gone home to bed. He thought very early that we were going to win, so he retired. I also want to thank Tom, point out Tom Reese, who is here, who was an early supporter. And I want to thank a number of other people, if I may, all of those of you who worked so hard in this campaign, all of the students who worked across this state. The members of my delegation, or our delegation, who also worked so diligently and with such unselfishness across the state on my behalf and on behalf of this cause that we're involved in. I want to thank Cesar Chavez, who was here a little earlier. And Bert Corona, who also worked with him, and all of those Mexican-Americans who were such supporters of mine. And Dolores Huerta, who is an old friend of mine and has worked with the union, to thank her and tell her how much I appreciate her coming tonight. We have certain obligations and responsibilities to our fellow citizens, which we've talked about during the course of this campaign, and I want to make it clear that if I'm elected President of the United States, with your help, I intend to keep them. I want to also thank all my friends in the black community. Yeah. Who made this campaign. Voting today, I think, really made a major difference for me. I want to express my appreciation to them. Yeah. To my old friend, if I may, Jennifer Johnson is here. And to Rosie Greer, who said that who said that he'd take care of anybody who didn't vote for me. In a kind way, because that's what we are in our country. Smile. Yeah. And I want to also, if I may, just take a moment more of your time to express my appreciation to Paul Schrade, who from the UAW, who worked so hard, and all the other members of the labor organizations and members of the labor union. I'm very grateful to him and for what he's done and the effort that he's made on behalf of the working man here in the state of California. I'm very, very appreciative. I'm very grateful for the vote that I received and for all that all of you worked on behalf of in the agricultural areas of the state as well as in the cities. I think it indicates quite clearly, as well as in the suburbs, I think it indicates quite clearly what we can do here in the United States. The vote here in the state of California, the vote in the state of South Dakota. Here is the most urban state of any of the states of our union. South Dakota, the most rural state of any of the states of our union. We're able to win them both. I think that we can end the divisions within the United States. What I think is quite clear is that we can work together in the last analysis, and that what has been going on within the United States over the period of the last 3 years the divisions, the violence, the disenchantment with our society, the divisions, whether it's between blacks and whites, between the poor and the more affluent, or between age groups, or on the war in Vietnam, that we can start to work together. We are a great country and a selfish country and a compassionate country. And I intend to make that my basis for running and over the period of the next few months. Ladies and gentlemen, if I can just take a moment more of your time, because everybody must be dying from the heat. But what I think all of these primaries have indicated, if I can just take a minute or 2 minutes more of your time. What all of these primaries have indicated, and all of the party caucuses have indicated, whether they occurred in Colorado or Idaho or Iowa, wherever they occurred, it was the people in the Democratic Party and the people in the United States want a change. And that change can come about only if those who are delegates in Chicago recognize the importance of what has happened here in the state.
Every child.
The importance of what has happened here in the state of California, what has happened in South Dakota, what happened in New Hampshire, what happened across the rest of this country. The country wants to move in a different direction. We want to deal with our own problems within our own country, and we want peace in Vietnam. I congratulate Senator McCarthy and those who have been associated with him in their efforts that they have started in New Hampshire and carried through to the primary here in the state of California. The fact is that all of us are involved in this great effort. And it's a great effort not on behalf of the Democratic Party, it's a great effort on behalf of the United States, on behalf of our own people, on behalf of mankind all around the globe and the next generation. I would hope now that the California primary is finished, now that these primaries are over, that we could now concentrate on having a dialogue or a debate, I hope, between the Vice President and perhaps myself on what direction we want to go in the United States. What we're going to do in the rural areas of our country, what we're going to do for those who still suffer within the United States from hunger, what we're going to do around the rest of the globe, and whether we're going to continue the policies that have been so unsuccessful in Vietnam of American troops and American Marines carrying the major burden of that conflict. I do not want to, and I think we should move in a different direction. So I thank all of you who made this possible this evening, all of the effort that you made, and all of the people whose names I haven't mentioned, but who did all of the work at the precinct level, who got out the vote, who did all of the effort, brought forth all of the effort that's required. I was a campaign manager 8 years ago. I know what a difference that kind of an effort and that kind of commitment makes. So I thank all of you, those of you who are here. Mayor Yorty has just sent me a message that we've been here too long already. So my thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there. Thank you.
Just go and start to struggle.
And I also wanted to play one of Robert Kennedy's final interviews that he gave. This was on ABC News, and let me say that. I apologize. That was that speech from the Ambassador Hotel was played on. I just want to say thanks to JFK 1963 YouTube channel, so that. That speech was, I was able to play that speech because of that YouTube channel, so thanks to them for having that video available. And now I want to play this is from the YouTube channel Sidra Zahir. This is one of Robert Kennedy's final interviews that he gave, and this was June 5th, 1968.
Well, I'm obviously happy that it's an apparent victory. I won't be happy or satisfied until it's over. But, I'm very pleased with South Dakota, where the vice president had campaigned and spent a good deal of time. It's his home state. And I'm obviously pleased that we're moving ahead here in the state of California, which has such a large number of delegates for Chicago.
There are some indications, still unverified, but some predictions that you might win more than 50% of the vote, substantially more than 50%. How would that make you feel?
Well, that would make me feel even more pleased. I would be just pleased if I won, because I think this was a difficult contest. There was a great deal of opposition put up against me, and I'm very grateful to all those who voted for me and all those who worked for me.
Would you agree that in the light of Senator McCarthy's substantial vote here, that you and he still have, somehow, you have to get together before the convention in order to stop Hubert Humphrey?
Well, I wouldn't put it in those terms so much as I put it in terms that I think the primaries have indicated all across the country that the country and the Democratic Party wants to move in a different direction than they have over the period of the last 3 years. I think for the Democratic Convention and the delegates of the Democratic Convention to ignore that quite clear mandate, I think would be a terrible mistake. I think that if we look at the record of all of the primaries and how we've done respectively, I would hope that perhaps I have great respect for Senator McCarthy. I have the greatest respect for those who have been associated with him in the effort. I would hope that perhaps we could get together now after these primaries are completed and finished and start to work together to build up forces which would bring the Democratic Convention in a different direction than it's apparently headed, at least at the moment.
If you defeat Senator McCarthy tonight in California, you will have beaten him in four out of five primaries.
Yes.
That's counting South Dakota today. Would you think this would finish him off as a viable candidate, as you like to put it?
I think I know that if I'd lost four out of five primaries, I'd be finished off. And I said to myself that I'd abide by California. Hubert Humphrey got out after he was beaten in West Virginia. He could have gone on. And obviously it's up to the individual to decide that. But if we're interested in the cause, if we're interested in the country, and we're interested in the direction that we want the United States to move in, each one of us has to examine our own conscience and decide how that can best be done. And we've gone through these contests. We presented ourselves to the voters and permitted the voters to decide. That's the purpose of the primaries, and the voters have made their judgment.
Senator Howard K. Smith would like to put a question to you, if you'll hold this up to your ear.
Senator, everybody makes a tactical mistake now and then. Do you think it was possibly a mistake for you to have said that you wouldn't be viable if you lost one primary?
No, I think that as Gene McCarthy said, that only one man would walk out of Indiana. As I said, after Oregon, that I was hurt in Oregon. But I think coming back under those circumstances here in the state of California and coming back in South Dakota, that it makes these wins here, even of greater importance and significance.
Well, Senator Kennedy, with...
And considering Vice President Humphrey has done... although he's made a great effort in various of these states, and particularly in South Dakota, his home state, has done so poorly, relatively, I think it's of great significance.
And Senator, you will probably get the California vote, according to the projections tonight. You will possibly get New York, your own state, and with what you already have, that should be quite a respectable basis, should it not, for fighting on for the nomination?
Yes, I think it is.
Senator, there have been reports that you have been physically tired from this grind with no stops at all. Is that so?
I feel a little bit better today because I slept today. But, it's been a long campaign and a long effort, and I tried to go to present myself to the people themselves rather than just to do it through television or through radio. I went to, Nebraska, to every community over 2,000 population, and many of these other states, 5,000 population. So I've made an effort, just because I think the people are entitled to see the candidate and talk to him and ask him questions. That's my reservations about Vice President Humphrey, who hasn't done that at all yet.
Senator Kennedy, this is Bill Lawrence in New York. While you and Senator McCarthy have been fighting it out in the primaries, as you've noted yourself, Senator, Vice President Humphrey's been doing very well in the non-primary states.
Yes.
Some even think he may have a majority now. How do you go about, what dramatic way do you go about prying some of these delegates loose or changing their intention?
I think in some of the key states, they've waited. Ohio has waited, and the vice president made a major effort for them to make that judgment before the California and primary, but they have waited. Michigan decided this week that they would wait. Those are two key states.
Well, of course, Dick Daley is what Dick
and
Daley.
Illinois, of course, is terribly important. And then there are about 15 other states where there will be state conventions where we will have to be making an effort. So I would think, I don't think, without any question, anybody has the nomination. Secondly, I remember in 1960 when we were leading going into the convention, and that it was always very, very difficult, even up to the last moment, to ensure that you were going to get the nomination. I haven't even made that start to make the effort in any of these states yet. It is true the vice president has moved around and he has been talking in these states, but I haven't even gone into these states yet.
Well,
I think
you...
that the primaries have indicated, as I said, that the Democratic Party, the rank and file, want to move in a different direction, a new direction, and I think it would be a very bad mistake if that was ignored by the delegates at Chicago.
Will you push right on now into the non-primary states?
I will.
Now, what do you think about this discussion we had the other night on ABC? Do you think it changed any votes? Do you think it was a factor in your victory in California, if it turns out to be one?
Yes. I think it was very important.
And
I think it was a turning point in the state of California.
Yep.
I think if I had done badly in that discussion, then I think that... and I would have had a very, very difficult time in the state.
Senator, I don't want to embarrass you, but a local educational station wanted to rerun the tape of that discussion, and we understand that permission was not given by your campaign headquarters.
No. Well, it's fine with me. Nobody ever asked me, but you have my permission right now. That's fine. I don't know who they spoke to, but you have my permission, and I would be happy to have that done.
Well, Senator, where do you go from here?
You mean personally?
Presently. I mean, tomorrow, next week.
Well, we're going to have some meetings tomorrow, and then the next day I go to New York. Or Thursday or Friday I come to New York, and we have some delegates that I'm supporting there in my own state that I will be working for over the period of the next 10 days. And I will also be going to some other states. and to see if I can gain some support across the country. I think it's still wide open. As I say, I would, if I can gain the support of some of those who have supported Senator McCarthy, some of the citizen groups in the state who want a different direction for the United States, then I think that we have a chance of winning. If I don't gain that support, then I think it's going to be very difficult to keep Vice President Humphrey from gaining the nomination for the Democratic Party.
Some of the big states that your brother had, John F. Kennedy had in 1960, like Pennsylvania, appear to be gone already, though. And they, as I remember, Dave Lawrence and Pennsylvania were very vital to victory in 1960.
They were, yes.
Can you get them back, maybe?
I think that's going to be difficult. I will try. But on the other hand, I have the votes of California, which President Kennedy didn't have in 1960. So, you know, it's going to be a long summer, I think, Bill.
Senator, you have said that you would not, under any circumstances, accept the vice presidential nomination. Can you conceive of the possibility of a Kennedy-McCarthy ticket? Do you think this is a practical political possibility?
I haven't really thought about it. I've just been trying to survive myself and carry, my campaign.
Why don't we end it?
So I'm concentrating on that. I am not trying to think about who's going to be vice president. I am making the effort myself, and I do know that I'm not going to, under any circumstances, be vice president myself.
Ideally, of course, you would now like to have Senator McCarthy throw his support to you. But is it conceivable that you might throw your support to him?
It doesn't seem really very practical, considering I won here in the state of, appear to have won in California, won in South Dakota, won by heavy margins in Nebraska, heavy margins in Indiana, and 2-1 in the District of Columbia. So, if we're in the primaries to present our candidacy to the people to see if we can gain support from the people, I think it's been quite clear where the support has gone.
Well, what if you got to a situation at the convention where you and Hubert Humphrey were in complete deadlock? At that point, might you move your support behind Senator McCarthy?
Well, can I wait until I meet you in Chicago?
All right.
Thank you.
And again, thank you to Sidra Zahir's YouTube channel for having that video available, which is one of Robert Kennedy's final interviews that he gave, until his unfortunate assassination. And I kind of wanted to just, or what I'm trying to do is kind of point out the similarities of what I see and what I think is happening with politics here, especially with in terms of the. We're still dealing with, I think, the same issues of, you know, the economy, the working class, and race, you know, and how we're still trying to deal with these issues. And, you know, with the Democratic Party now, it seems there's still some question of whether or not which direction to go. You have, I suppose you would say, the establishment part of that party, and then you have the, I guess, the very left, or more to the left, Bernie Sanders part of that party. And it seems now that it's trying to figure out which where its message, where it's what it wants to be, and which issues they are trying to. But I find that very interesting, and how it's you're seeing very much similarities, if not almost a sense of a repeat of history, or perhaps there's a saying, history doesn't exactly repeat, it rhymes, like poetry. I think that's something I've heard before. But this past week also marks the anniversary, what was going on with the McCarthy hearings, of what was going on, and the chief counsel, and this was, I believe, it was, you know, this was during the McCarthy hearings and the whole the Red Scare of the 50s. And this is from the YouTube channel, and this mark I believe this was yesterday marked the 50th anniversary of this moment in history of Joseph Welch, the chief counsel for the U.S. Army, who was growing tired of Joseph McCarthy, who led the whole Red Scare communist infiltration of what was going on in America at the time. And Mr. Welch grew tired of Mr. McCarthy's accusations. And this is that moment in history.
Chairman, may I say that Mr. Welch talks about this being cruel and reckless. He was just baiting. He has been baiting Mr. Cohen here for hours, requesting that Mr. Cohen, before sundown, get out of any department of the government anyone who is serving the communist cause. Now, I just give this man's record. And I want to say, Mr. Welch, that it has been labeled long before he became a member, as early as 1944.
Senator, may we not drop this? We know he belongs to the Lawyers Guild. And Mr. Cohen nods his head at me. I did you, I think, no personal injury, Mr. Cohen.
No, sir.
I meant to do you no personal injury. And if I did, I beg your pardon. Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. You no sense of decency, sir, at long last? Have you left no sense of decency?
I know this hurts you, Mr. Welch.
May I say,
Mr. Chairman, as a point of personal privilege, I'd like to finish this.
Senator, I think it hurts you too, sir.
I'd like to finish this. I know Mr. Cohen would rather not have me go into this. I intend to, however, and Mr. Welch talks about any sense of decency. It seems that Mr. Welch is pained so deeply, he thinks it's improper for me to give the record, the Communist Front record, of the man whom he wanted to foist upon this committee. But it doesn't pain him at all. There's no pain in his chest about the attempt to destroy the reputation and the take the jobs away from the young men who are working on my committee. And Mr. Welch, if I have said anything here which is untrue, then tell me. I have heard you and everyone else talk so much about laying the truth upon the table that when I heard completely phony, Mr. Welch. I've listened to you now for a long time. Just saying, now, before sundown, you must get these people out of government. So that I just want to have it very clear that you were not so serious about that when you tried to recommend this man for this committee. But the point is,
Mr. Chair, I'd like to say again that he does not believe Mr. Welch recommended Mr. Fisher counsel for this committee, because he had through his office all the recommendations which were made and does not recall any of them coming from Mr. Welch, and that would include Mr. Fisher.
Well, let me ask Mr. Welch. You brought him down, did you not, to act as your assistant?
Mr. McCarthy, I will not discuss this further with you. You have sat within 6 feet of me and could have asked me about Fred Fisher. You have seen fit to bring it out. And if there is a God in heaven, it will do neither you nor your cause any good. I will not discuss it further. I will not ask Mr. Cohen any more witnesses. You, Mr. Chairman, may, if you will, call the next witness.
And again, I would like, that was Joseph Welch, as I said before, growing tired of Joseph McCarthy's accusations into the whole communist Red Scare that was going on in the 50s. And I believe it was either today or yesterday marked the anniversary of that moment in history. I have some PS announcements to make. At the Art Theater, these are show times for the Art Theater. I believe these just started yesterday, Friday, and this will be these showings or movie showings will be going through the 14th, which is Thursday. Continuing for another week is RBG, An Intimate Portrait of an Unlikely Star, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. With unprecedented access, the filmmakers explore how her early legal battles changed the world for women. Also playing is Disobedience, which is screening daily. The movie looks in on a New York photographer who flies to London after learning about her estranged father's death. She returns to the same Orthodox Jewish community that shunned her because of her homosexuality, which again presents a problem after a renewed encounter. Also playing is The Death of Stalin, which will continue its run with three screenings. The story involves the dictator Joseph Stalin, who died in 1953. After his death, his cronies squared off in a frantic power struggle to become the next Soviet leader. As they bumble, brawl, and backstab their way to the top, the question remains just who is running the government. Also, there will be a 10 p.m. weekend movie showing of showing at 10 p.m. I believe this weekend is also the movie Black Cat, the story of an American photographer and Scotland Yard inspector who suspect a man's cat has committed murder. So it's very, very fascinating. And it is about 12:38. I'm going to play a little song to kind of get my next this tune is A Bridge to Somewhere, and this is by Tom Chapin and Friends from his album At the Turning Point. And again, you're listening to 90.1 FM here on WFT Champaign.
Seems like a bubble has been burst, like we're marching in reverse, heading straight from bad to worse, going nowhere. But though a lot of milk's been spilled, a lot of hopes and dreams been killed, instead of tearing down, let's build a bridge to somewhere. Build a bridge to somewhere, somewhere, somehow. Build a bridge to somewhere now.
Try that part.
Build a bridge to somewhere, somewhere, somehow. Build a bridge to somewhere now. There is a place in your hometown, all boarded up and tumbled down, where all the folks just hang around, going nowhere. The neighborhood with the rundown heart, pick up some wood from the lumber mart, grab what tools you got and start a bridge to somewhere. Build a bridge to somewhere, somewhere, somehow. Build a bridge to somewhere now.
Sounds good, do it again.
Build a bridge to somewhere, somewhere, somehow. Build a bridge to somewhere now. Build a bridge no matter how. Build a bridge, no matter where. Build a bridge from any here. Build a bridge to any there. Build a bridge to somewhere, somewhere, somehow. Build a bridge to somewhere now.
Johnny, play one.
And we're back here on WFT Champaign. And just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And I am going to do a weather update because we have been getting some kind of been getting a lot of rain these past couple of days. And right now, let's see what I'm looking at weather.com at the moment. So please be a little, be as patient as you can with me. Currently, right now, it's about 76 degrees and partly cloudy. Let's check the alley. Yeah, there's rainstorms to the north of us, north of Rantoul, that are, yeah, those might come. There's a very good likely chance of rain tonight, I believe. I apologize, I'm having technology. It's great when it works, but when it's not, it's really inconvenient. So for right now, it will be get down to the mid to high 70s tonight. At 8 p.m., there is a 30% chance of isolated thunderstorms, and then around 10 p.m. all the way to past midnight, there is about a 40 to 50% chance of scattered thunderstorms, and that will go through most of the night, I believe. And let's see, I'll look at the 5-day forecast. There is a 80% chance of thunderstorms tomorrow, Sunday, and then Monday will just essentially be mostly cloudy. Again, this is, I'm looking at the weather.com channel, so so this is my source that I'm using. And Tuesday, there will be 60% chance of scattered thunderstorms and temperatures. And between Sunday and Tuesday, the temperature will be anywhere between up to the high 80s, so around 88, 87 degrees, and that's your very kind of dotted weather report for me. If you can just give me a moment, I'm gonna play. I trying to get situated here. I'm gonna play another tune from the Chicago Jazz. I already played one song, let's see if I can get it. Get that queued up and get that ready. That's getting situated here. Chicago Jazz, and this is the song that I'm going to play is Franz Jackson with Jim Beebe's Chicago Jazz. And I think that the song is called Through the Night, and it's from the Chicago Jazz album. So without further ado, thank you. And we're back here on WFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and you can stream us online at WFT.org. And in this last part of my show, I want to talk about, this is a hard subject, but with the yesterday, as I'm sure you hopefully maybe heard, Anthony Bourdain had committed suicide, and he was, I believe, only 61 years old. And I'm sure, like you, I was incredibly shocked and, you know, surprised that, you know, of this news, hearing this news. And of course, this comes not too long after Kate Spade, who was a fashion designer, had also had taken her life. And so now there's been kind of this awareness, you know, news of suicides, and there is in Illinois, actually, this was a report, and from the Chicago Tonight, suicide rates in Illinois have risen 23% from 1999 to 2016, and this is according to the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, there have been an increase in suicides in almost every state, I believe, except for Nevada, between 1999 and 2016. Illinois, as I said, saw an increase of about 22.8%. And if, you know, and I also wanted to let you know, if you or someone you know is having thoughts of suicide, you can contact the National Suicide Prevention Line, and their phone number is 1-800-273-8255. And again, that phone number is 1-800-273-8255. You can also go to their chat. I believe there's a chat or somebody you can talk to online, and that's suicidepreventionline.org. lifeline.org, and that's all, it's all one, you know, you type, it's all one, all these words put together. So it's suicidepreventionlifeline.org, and again, the phone number is 1-800-273-8255. And I kind of want to do something a little bit different here as I end this show. You know, Anthony Bourdain was somebody who I was really, I wouldn't say I was a huge fan, but I definitely know him, and I really did like his show, No Reservations, and a lot of people, I think, did, because it kind of gave us a way to look at, you know, he basically had the coolest job, which is he got to travel around the world, and he got to try all the, you know, he was a chef, but he had this incredible, you know, perspective that he could give on food and how food, you know, represents culture, you know, how, you know, can be a defining thing for, you know, these different countries. And he would give us these incredible insights and perspectives that, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, him and his show, that we probably wouldn't be able to know about. And it's, and I actually, in last year, and or about a year ago, I actually was in Denver, and I got to eat, I believe the restaurant was called Jim's Gourmet Biker Dogs. I don't mean to, like, this isn't like a plug-in for them. This, I was actually in Denver, and I didn't realize that he had actually, this was a restaurant that Anthony Bourdain had actually eaten at, and I think it's called Jim's Gourmet Biker Dogs, and this isn't a plug-in for them. This is just, I had found out that, even before or after, but it doesn't really matter, that Anthony Bourdain had eaten there, and I just thought that was like the coolest thing, that I was actually eating somewhere that Anthony Bourdain had done a show for done a feature, you know, for this restaurant, for you know, for a show, no reservations, because, like, as I, you know, as I'm trying to explain, I think, you know, Bourdain, you know, just had, you know, he had this incredible, I think, you know, open-mindedness, and just you know, you could just watch his show and you just felt you were learning something. And then he kind of talked about how, you know, everyone, you know, has, you know, eats, you know, that's something we could all relate to, is, you know, eating at the table. And that's, you know, just part of, you know, a lot, almost every culture is, you know, in human aspects, is, you know, how food can be define us as a culture, you know, a culture. And it's something we can all relate to as human beings. And he was able to kind of open that, or give us that perspective. And, you know, as, you know, and to kind of talk about depression, you know, it's, you know, of course, what we've been hearing is that, you know, we never thought somebody like Mr. Bourdain would, you know, do something like this. And, you know, I'm somebody who has, I guess, you know, a bit of a unique perspective when it comes to, you know, depression is something I've experienced, and what I'm trying to say is little bit over a month ago, the actor Vern Troy, who has he had achondroplasia, which is a sense of dwarfism, short stature. If you don't know what that is, he was in the Austin Powers movies. He was the henchman of Mike Myers' Dr. Evil character. And I actually he and I both have achondroplasia, which is a sense of dwarfism. And suicide, I don't want to say it's common with people with dwarfism, but it is something that definitely has happened with, you know, people who are famous with dwarfs who are, you know, movie stars or celebrities. And the thing I just wanted to, if I have read something about that I read about when it comes to relationships and when it comes to communication, I think it's important. And this is something I remember reading online, and, you know, as I kind of, because I was going through kind of a hard time. You know, when you have friends or any kind of friendship, I think it's important not to expect anything in return when it comes to, you know, for compassion or love. And I know I think as human beings, all also want to be able to make a difference and to, you know, not let your faults or your flaws or, you know, your failures define you. And, you know, always be open and be trying to communicate with people and try to, you know, maybe say hello to someone or try to say, you know, hey, I haven't heard from you for a while. How's your life going? And, it's basically what I want to say is that, you know, if you're listening, you know, that you matter in this world, because you don't know whether or not you're making a difference. I believe that everyone can make a difference in this world, and maybe we just need to be more communicative with it, you know, even in this world of social media. And, you know, Anthony Bourdain definitely did with his show, because he opened this new perspective of on different cultures and countries, and he was able to do that in an incredible way. But I have to wrap up my show. So I hope you have a wonderful day, and I wish you all the luck in the world. I'm going to play a little Miles Davis as to finish you off. And again, this is we'll continue our programming here on WEFT 90.1 FM. Thank you. Bye.